Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. Every year, the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development recognizes 40 Native individuals who are in the prime of their professional careers with the 40 Under 40 Award. These are movers, shakers, tribal leaders, educators, storytellers, entrepreneurs, healers, and creators. We'll talk with a few awardees about the good work that they're doing in their Native communities. Join us and get inspired. We'll be right back after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Indian Health Service is preparing for its COVID-19 vaccine distribution this week. Members of the IHS COVID-19 Task Force talked about plans during a press call Friday. Vaccines are expected to be distributed to 11 IHS areas for personnel, workforce, and long-term care workers. Rear Admiral Francis Frazier is the lead on the IHS COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force.
During Phase 1A, the Indian Health Service is expecting to receive 46,000 doses of Moderna and more than 22,400 doses of Pfizer vaccine. This would allow the IHS to vaccinate 100% of its healthcare workforce and residents of long-term care facilities. Health facilities will use the remainder of the Pfizer and Moderna doses to vaccinate the next priority populations based on ACIP guidelines. Early protection of healthcare personnel is critical to preserving capacity to care for patients with and without COVID-19.
Tribal health programs and urban health organizations have the option of getting the vaccine through the Indian Health Service or states. 338 programs have decided to receive the vaccine from IHS. Two of the largest tribes in the United States are getting the vaccine from the Indian Health Service, the Cherokee Nation and the Navajo Nation. Both tribes anticipate receiving the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine this week. The Cherokee Nation expects to receive 900 first doses, which will go to healthcare workers, elders, and Cherokee speakers. The Navajo Nation expects to receive 3,900 doses for healthcare workers, EMS staff, traditional practitioners, and long-term care facilities. New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland says she'll support President-elect Joe Biden's pick for Secretary of the Department of the Interior, saying she's not being vetted directly by the transition team. Haaland made the comments on a Washington Post live interview Friday about her name being in the mix of possible people to lead the agency for the next presidential administration. Haaland says her focus right now is helping tribes deal with COVID-19.
This is an issue in Indian country. When we talk about Indian country, one of the most challenged communities because they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have the health care they need. We are working feverishly on that. What I will say about the Interior Secretary position is that our country has come a long way. I am so proud that Charisse Davids and I became the first Native women to serve in Congress. And I think it's wonderful that our country is progressing in that manner, that a cabinet level position filled by a Native American is a conversation that we're having right now.
Tribal leaders, directors of Native organizations, and Hollywood stars are among those urging Biden to pick Haaland to lead the Interior Department. Change the Name advocates are taking to social media praising news. The Cleveland Indians are said to be dropping their team name. The New York Times on Sunday reported the team has decided to change its name and anticipates an announcement this week. Last year, the baseball team removed its Chief Wahoo mascot and logo. Change the Name advocates, grassroots groups, tribes, and national Native organizations are among those who've long called for the team to end the use of its mascot and change its name. And they're calling on other sports teams to do the same. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News. National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, joining you today through Skype. Making changes in Native America takes a lot of hard work, and it includes a lot of passion and expertise. That's why the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development honors the hard work of 40 Native individuals who are 40 or younger, who are doing good work in their Native communities. These folks are educators, entrepreneurs, healthcare professionals, tribal leaders, and legal experts. We don't have time to talk to all 40 of them on our show today, but we rounded up a handful to put the spotlight on them. If you want to recognize 40 Under 40 award winner from this year's class, you're welcome to call us and share kudos. We also want to hear about what you expect from community leaders. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now is Chad Marchand. He's the Vice President of the National Center for American Indian Enterprise and a member of the Colville Confederated Tribes. Welcome to Native America Calling, Chad.
Monica, thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. Hey, so why was it important that NCAIED pick the 40 Under 40 this year with, you know, so many events and conferences being canceled? I know you usually hand out the awards at your event. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, correct. And so NCIED, or the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development, you know, we've been around about 50 years now in supporting American Indian tribes and their enterprises and really economic development in Indian country. And the award was started about, this year is his 12th year. And so we have, with this year's award winners, about 480 people who have been recognized, you know, throughout the year for their hard work, dedication, perseverance. And especially this year, I think it's especially important to recognize some of the work that's going on during, you know, this pandemic, and to show resiliency and the dedication toward their communities and businesses that they're impacting. So, you know, this award, you know, throughout its 12 years now has been really, it's really nominated from their peers. And so people within the field that they're working with are showcasing their talents and expertise. And so I think today, or you'll hear from a variety of them today, but, you know, throughout the 40, you know, they're coming from academia, medical fields, government, nonprofits, legal fields, and so forth. And so I think it's important, especially this year, is to showcase what's going on right now in the field.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been saying all year that this is – that we're resilient people. We've always been resilient people, but, you know, really this year is an evidence of that, of how strong we are in Native America. And I'm wondering, you know, how's your organization doing during the pandemic?
Yeah, so, you know, it's we also host, and you mentioned a couple of the conferences, we host our Native Edge Institutes. And so those are in part, you know, funded by several grants that we received over the last couple of years. But, you know, pre-COVID, we were doing pretty much one training a month in person. And so those have transitioned. RES was actually held last March, and that was, you know, pretty much, you know, COVID-19 hit during that week, actually. And we had to transition quickly to some of the measures we were taking into account. But after that, we've been hosting virtual trainings, you know, pretty much since May of this year, and doing it once a month. And so, you know, it's been a transition, but, you know, we're getting a lot of attendance nationally around the country. We still do them once a month. Our next one is actually going to be this week. We're actually hosting a Native Edge Institute on the 16th and 17th, and they're free for anybody to attend. You can actually sign up through our website, and the training represents really, it's regionalized to the area we're in, but this one's going to be focused on Reno, and it's focusing on for example, like contracting, entrepreneurship, leadership development. It has some stuff on capital and finance for businesses. And those will take place from now until, I think our next one is Oklahoma on January 28th. And we have one in Louisiana on the 15th of February as well. So, you know, we're still going, and we just had to adjust like everybody else had to.
I love it. Your organization is always working hard to break that buckskin ceiling, you know, and help Native people get through a business world that's not always been really friendly to Native folks. Why did you pick 40? Like, what is there a significance to the age 40 and why that's important?
You know, I think, and I credit our board and, you know, and all the board members we have at NCIED, Margo Gray was especially instrumental in starting the program, you know, 12 years ago. You know, I think that, you know, I don't know if 40 is a magic number, but I definitely feel that, you know, I was a 40 recipient in 2016. And I think it's a point, in, you know, in everybody's career, you know, as far as what they've achieved academically, professionally, you know, and amongst their peers. I think it's probably a good time as far as, at least my perspective, as far as age goes. I think I received it actually in my early 30s, but yeah, it's something I think for around the country, I think we recognize. And I think it's an important thing about this one is that, you know, there's a lot of, there's several other 40 awards like in cities and counties nationwide, but this one is a national award. You know, so there are a ton of people that are competing for this award nationwide, and we receive a number of applications. And the other point I think I point out is that they're coming from all different variety of fields. You know, it's just not one, for example, like an academia field or a medical field. This represents a number of different fields across the country. And so when you receive this award, I think it's especially impactful of the work that you're doing.
Well, we're talking about 40 Under 40 today from the National Center for American Indian Enterprise. And if you want to get in on the conversation, phone lines are open. We'll take your calls. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Maybe you were last year or the year before a 40 Under 40 award winner, or you just want to say congratulations to the winners that we're going to talk to in just a moment. 1-800-996-2848. And Chad, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of who the 40 Under 40 are this year? They're not all business entrepreneurs.
No, and so I think it's you know, what I just mentioned as far as different fields, but, you know, there's people from, you know, I think at the top of the hour when you mentioned was, you know, from tribes, from tribal administrators to academics. We have people that are, I think you'll talk to today, they're coming from legal fields. You know, I actually worked with a few in my previous job at the University of Arizona. So I have a friend there who received the award this year. But no, they are represented from a number of different fields, tribes especially. A couple of them are coming from economic development backgrounds. I know you have one from Navajo Nation's the executive director of Navajo Nation Economic Development. You have several people that are also representing working with states and counties, I think, throughout this. And so, you know, I think it is an award that represents people across several fields. And, you know, when they're nominated, you know, the majority of the time they're nominated from their peers or people they're working with. And so I think that's especially impactful when you get that recognition from somebody, you know, you're actually directly working with.
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to have your friends support you and, you know, really call you out for your work, your good work. Well, let's talk to one of the 40 Under 40 award winners. Joining us from Belcourt, North Dakota is Tyler Parisian. He's a medical laboratory technician, program director, and instructor at Turtle Mountain Community College, and he is Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Parisian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. So congratulations. How did it feel to find out you were one of the 40 under 40?
I was pretty surprised, also very humbled. I was nominated by Chris DeMoya with the American Indian Graduate Center, so I was aware that I was nominated, but a friend from North Carolina on the opposite side of the country actually had shared the social media post with me to let me know that I had won. So it kind of came out of nowhere when it was announced, and I was really surprised.
It is surprising. So tell us about what a laboratory technician does.
Right. So laboratory technicians, a lot of people think that or refer to us as the vampires of the hospital. But actually, We're a lot more than that. Medical laboratory technicians is the two-year level. We also have medical technicians, which is a bachelor's degree level. And what we do is we do collect blood and urine and other bodily fluids, and we do the laboratory testing on it to try to help either determine if there's a disease process present or maybe make a diagnosis of something. 70% of what a doctor utilizes to make a diagnosis comes from the laboratory. So we do all of that testing. We do transfusion medicine, chemistry. We do microbiology testing. So, medical laboratory technicians, we go through about 7 different sciences just to do our job, and it's pretty involved.
I imagine that there is an incredible need for laboratory technicians these days.
Yeah, quite a few of the Indian Health Services within 100 or 200 miles of Belcourt are all looking to hire lab technicians right now. And I feel like that need is across Indian country. And we're lucky to have one of the few MLT programs at a tribal college. And we're nationally accredited, and our students are going out and working all over the place, not just in Indian country. I recently had 2 graduates that worked with the state health lab, and we're actually doing the coronavirus testing for the state of North Dakota.
Oh, that's awesome. I want to talk to you more about this, after the break. We're going to go to a short break. But just real quick, is it challenging to get into your program? Is it, like a high-level medical field?
I wouldn't say that it's challenging to get into the program, but it is a challenging program to finish. There's a lot of science and a lot of math, and oftentimes my students are not happy with me with the amount of homework they have to do. It's not difficult to get into, but it is difficult to finish.
All right. Well, we'll get more into that after the break. Today we are talking with the 40 under 40. If you were one, 40 under 40, give us a call, share 1-800-996-2848, or you just want to congratulate these incredible young people under 40 who are doing great things in Native America and achieving a lot. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to go to a short break. We'll be right back. The Winslow Indian Healthcare Center in Arizona is a source for comprehensive health services throughout the pandemic. They are on the front lines when it comes to caring for Navajo citizens. On the next Native America Calling, we'll check in with the tribally run clinic and find out what it takes to keep up with the unrelenting demand.
If you're a Native American entrepreneur looking to expand or start up a business, you should know about the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program, a federal program encouraging private lenders to make the business loan you need. The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can support you. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. We're celebrating the 2020 class of 40 under 40 with the National Center of American Indian Enterprise Development today. Is in your Native community who deserves recognition for their good work? Join our conversation and do a little name dropping. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Chad Marchand is with us. He's the Vice President of the National Center for American Indian Enterprise and a member of the Colville Confederated Tribes. Also, Tyler Parisian is with us. He's a medical laboratory technician, program director, and instructor at the Turtle Mountain Community College. And Tyler, or Dr. Parisian, before the break, we were talking about your program. Tell us a little bit more about it. Like, what kind of person should consider becoming a lab tech?
That's kind of a funny question among other lab techs and people in our profession, because oftentimes we refer to ourselves as the people who want to work in medicine and do medicine, but we don't want to deal with patients one-on-one. And, you know, in the laboratory, we're kind of tucked away in a basement somewhere or away, and we're not really seen very often. But I think that, you know, if you want to work in medicine, maybe not deal with patients as often, but make a huge difference, then medical lab science is the route to go. And then on top of that, it's somebody who really has an interest in science, medicine, math. I feel like those are the types of people that do well in my programs. You know, I had a few that started in the nursing profession and came over into medical lab, and they love it a lot more because of all of the additional science that they learned throughout the program. So I think it's people who have an affinity for biological sciences and math and also want to work in medicine.
What drew you to it?
I was actually hospitalized for a week whenever I was in my undergrad. And while I was hospitalized, I had a phlebotomist come in and take my blood 3 or 4 times a day and kept mentioning something about bilirubin. And at the time, I was pursuing a forensic science degree, and so I wanted to know what bilirubin was. So I looked up into the profession. I actually had some relatives at the same college that were in the profession, and I asked them about it, and then I found out that maybe I could also still do forensics, but get a medical lab degree. So I actually switched majors about a month after I was released from the hospital. So I've always been aware of medical lab. I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it, but then after being hospitalized myself and wanting to know more, that's what pushed me into it a little bit. And then on top of that, I've always... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what is bilirubin?
Bilirubin is a breakdown product of your red blood cells. So in my case, I was in the hospital because my gallbladder needed to come out, and my bilirubin was high because there was a blockage in my bile ducts. So bilirubin is a byproduct of your gastrointestinal tract, and it's a breakdown of your red cells.
Interesting. And you wanted to share a little more?
Yeah, I was going to state that I was always also interested in medicine because when I was younger, my grandmother had passed away, and I remember not understanding what the doctor was telling us. I just knew that everybody around me was really sad, and so I wanted to get an education to where I wouldn't not know what we were being told in a medical situation.
Yeah, I know that's something that we've heard many times from Native folks working in the medical field who come on the show. They say that it's an incident that happened, either they were in the hospital or family member was in the hospital, and just not being able to sort of communicate with the medical professionals, which is why it's so important to have Native folks getting into the profession. Make your best pitch for lab techs, for choosing, you know, for the natives out there listening who are thinking about, you know, a new career or starting a career. Why lab techs?
Well, you know, with laboratory medicine, you're never going to be out of a job. You could take a United States map, throw a dart, and find a job as a medical laboratory technician, wherever that dart lands. You have the opportunity to travel, and then you make a pretty decent wage as a laboratory technician. So aside from learning all of the science and being aware of the processes that are happening in our bodies and then contributing to that diagnosis, you know, you get that opportunity to have a career almost virtually anywhere in the United States, and you're going to make a good wage. On top of that, you know, we have the opportunity to serve our own people by getting a degree in medical lab science, because as I stated earlier, there's a huge need for it. And I think that you could find any Indian Health Service and they're looking for lab technicians. Our own Indian Health Service in Belco right now is currently in the process of vetting some of our students to hire them. So they'll get to work and serve their own communities, make a decent wage, and then they know a lot of science.
That's awesome. And what about leadership roles? Is there an opportunity to move up?
Yeah, so the program at Turtle Mountain Community College is a two-year program, so our students will graduate with an Associate of Applied Science. And then from there, they could pursue a bachelor's degree and then even a master's degree or a doctorate degree, I believe, is being offered now in the profession too. But on the actual bench in the hospital, you could start as a generalist. You could work in a very specific area like hematology. You could move up to department supervisor, laboratory supervisor, and then with that doctorate, I do believe they're trying to bring laboratory technicians in to the medical team where they're making decisions and making suggestions to the doctor. So there is a lot of room for advancement, I believe. And then if it ends up being not being your route, you could always pursue teaching like I have.
That's great. Tyler, you know, share with us some information about folks might be interested in getting into your program at Turtle Mountain Community College. It's not just for Turtle Mountain citizens, right? Other folks can go to that school.
Right. Turtle Mountain has open enrollment, so we actually have members from the area communities that have been messaging and asking to try to get into our program. There's been people that are planning on traveling 3 hours from the northern part of the state to pursue our program. So even though we're at a tribal college, we're not strictly limited to tribal citizens as far as getting into our programs. The only downside for my program only being 2 years is that I have to follow a cohort model, so we can only take new students every fall.
And are you guys still accepting applications for this next fall?
Yes. We accept applications throughout the whole year, because even though you might want to register in the spring semester, I might be able to advise the student to take a few intro to biology classes to get them a little bit more prepared for the actual program. So we don't really turn away students. They could enroll anytime or email me anytime about questions for the program. Currently, with the coronavirus pandemic, the program went virtual for this year, but we have to do a lot of hands-on laboratory training. So it's important that somebody that wants to pursue this program is within traveling distance of the college for the one-on-one or the hands-on laboratory trainings.
And Tyler, where can folks learn more?
They could go to tm.edu, and that is the Turtle Mountain Community College's webpage. And then they could look into the search bar and type in medical lab technician, and it'll bring them right to my programs page with the handbook and the course descriptions and course listings.
All right. Dr. Tyler Parisian, he's a medical laboratory technician, program director, and instructor at the Turtle Mountain Community College, and he is a 40 under 40. Tyler, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And we are talking with 40 under 40 winners today. And let's bring another one into the conversation. Joining us from El Paso, Texas, is Jacob Schellinger. He is an attorney in the Tribal Affairs Group at Lewis Rocha Rothgerber Christie, and he's a member of the Stockbridge Muncie community. Welcome to Native America Calling, Jacob.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the line. So were you excited to hear that you were one of the 40 under 40?
Yeah, I was definitely excited. I was, working on something pretty diligently, and all of a sudden I started receiving a couple text messages and was pretty surprised. It was a great honor, and it was one of those things where you're maybe not expecting it at the moment, but it's pleasant to hear and really honored to be a part of a group of such talented people.
No, it's always nice to be recognized for your work. You know, we don't do the work to be recognized, but it's nice when somebody gives you, you know, an attaboy.
That's right.
So, Jacob, you know, what inspired you to go into Indian law?
Sure. Well, so I'm originally from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area, and I've grown up in the urban area of my entire life and been an urban Indian. But growing up, I watched my mom and my aunts be very active in the Indian community in Milwaukee. And seeing their commitment was very much an inspiration for me. Just kind of the level of commitment and knowing that there's an obligation to give back. And then in addition to that, there was a lot of hard work and sacrifice by my grandparents, my parents, and my aunts and uncles that, you know, paved the way for me to have the opportunities that I've had. And so because of that, you know, being an attorney who practices Indian law is a way for me to contribute to my community sort of by serving the broader Indian community. And so I take that to heart with me every single day. I consider myself to be an Indian country advocate and, of course, an advocate for our clients. But it's a very personal thing, and it comes from a sense of obligation and also just, you know, witnessing the hard work of my family.
It's a pretty specific area to focus on. Where did you go to law school, and what kind of, you know, was there an ability for you to really hone in on Indian law at law school?
Yeah. So I went to ASU and I participated in the Indian legal program there. And as a result of that, there was plenty of course offerings to really get you steeped in Indian law and policy. And I think one of the things that's really unique about Indian law is it touches on absolutely everything. You know, the body of federal Indian law is really about the relationship between tribes and the federal government, as well as tribes and the states. And as a result of that, you know, just about anything you can think of has an Indian law twist to it. And so it can be, you know, as simple as, a personal injury case, or something as complicated as putting together a major development project. Doing business or activity in Indian country has, different implications than other places throughout the United States. And so, ASU is a really good program to provide a strong base knowledge in that and really help me to sort of find my voice as an advocate, and also help me to kind of discover that economic development is an area that I've wanted to focus on and been lucky enough to focus on since being in law school. I've had the opportunity to work on the national side of things, and then now in private practice. And throughout that, one of the things that's really driven me, and one of the things that I think is really important as an Indian law attorney or as a tribal attorney, is making sure that tribes have the opportunities to develop strong economies, because ultimately that builds also stronger governance and allows tribes to make decisions without really having to worry as much about sort of external factors. And so there are a lot of great programs out there that are focused on, Indian law and policy. And there's a variety of good schools. I feel very lucky to be an alum of ASU's Indian legal program, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that tribes are really learning these days is how to build an economy that's not too dependent on other things. And, on Wednesday, we're going to talk about gaming and, how casinos are doing during this pandemic. What would you say is like the most important thing that you emphasize to tribes about how to build the best economies for themselves that, I realize that we can't be completely independent from the rest of the U.S. or the outside world, but how do you build that independence?
Well, I think it always starts with finding solutions that work for an individual community. I think, there's no one-size-fits-all box, certainly for different tribes across the United States. And so it really takes looking at, your citizenship and your location and your interests and kind of building out from there. I think, even in some of my previous work that's sort of outside of the advising individual clients, one of the things that we often focus on the federal level is just making sure that, when legislation is being considered or when there's programs being considered, one, making sure that, tribes have access to those programs or funding, but also making sure that things are tailored so that individual communities can take advantage of them. And so the same thing holds true in both circumstances. Solutions have to be, community focused. And so, in having that conversation, it's really, getting to know, the leadership that you're working with and also the community that you're working for, and making sure that the solutions are focused in a way that's tailored to the individual circumstance of the community.
What advice would you give to Native law students who are just starting out right now?
That's a really, really, really great question. One, law school is really challenging, but it's really, really rewarding. And so, one, I would, congratulate them for choosing that path. I think it's a really great way to be an advocate for your community and for tribes nationally. But a couple of different things come to mind. I think, one of the first things that is, served me very well and I think is really important is having a plan. Before going to law school, I worked for my uncle, who actually owns an in-ground pool installation company in Minnesota. And he always stressed to me that, you need to treat, anything that you're doing as a career, and you always need to have a plan. And I think because of that, I think that's really good advice. And two, I think it's equally applicable mm-hmm. to law students. If you, if you're asking yourself the question, what do I want to do and what do I want to be? It gives you a guide and it'll kind of keep you pointed in a direction.
Hang on 1 second, Jacob. We're going to go to a short break, and we want to hear the rest of your advice after the break. We're talking with the 40 under 40 today, and we're going to go to a short break. 1-800-996-2848. We'll be right back.
Support by Navajo Language Renaissance, presenting Rosetta Stone Navajo for iPads, iPhones, Chromebooks, and Android devices with 2 learning levels and a self-correcting pronunciation feature. Info at NavajoRenaissance.org. Support for this show provided by Canyon Records, producer of R. Carlos Nakai's newest album of Native American flute music, Nocturne. Nocturne is available at Amazon, iTunes, and CanyonRecords.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, and we are celebrating the good work of this year's 40 Under 40 class. What do you think it means to be a mover and shaker in Native America? Who's doing awesome work in your community? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Before the break, we were talking with Jacob Schellinger. He's the attorney in Tribal Affairs Group at Lewis Rocha Roth Gerber and Christie. And Jacob, before the break, you were sharing advice for new law students, Native law students. Go ahead, finish.
Certainly. So the first point is, have a plan, but also I think it's also really important to be flexible. Plans change over time. Doors will open and close, and that's totally okay. I think the key is to really keep pushing forward with a goal in mind. For me, it's been working on economic development issues as an attorney and advocate for tribes. And of course, there's been, things change over time and you end up with different opportunities and you get an opportunity to pursue those. I think another thing that I would say is be willing to be uncomfortable. Some of the biggest opportunities for growth are the things that may seem uncomfortable. I mean, it could be anything from a new job, a public speaking opportunity, a volunteer opportunity, or really anything. It's those moments where you take yourself kind of outside of your comfort zone that you're really stretching yourself and you're making yourself into, in my case, or in the case of a young attorney, a better advocate. And then finally, I think one thing that's really, really important, especially for law students, is that there's no one right way. It's really important to approach your schoolwork and your work in a way that works for you. And, that really certainly includes, looking to others to see sort of the path that they've blazed. But at the same time, realizing that, we all have our own strengths and weaknesses, our own characteristics. And so ultimately, choosing the way that works for you to, accomplish whatever it is you set out to do is a really important thing for law students. And I think that may be actually the most important thing.
Oh, that sounds like great advice, Jacob. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Jacob is a 40 under 40 recipient, and it's good to chat with you.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's been great.
And today we are talking with 40 under 40 recipients. Let's add a few more to the conversation. Joining us now from Leech Lake, the Leech Lake Reservation in Minnesota, is Levi Brown. He's the director of the Office of Tribal Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and he is Anishinaabe from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Levi.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So how do you feel about being a 40 under 40?
Definitely humbled in the sense of sometimes the work you do, you don't really stop to take a look at it. And, you know, I think when it happens and somebody acknowledges that work, it is very, very humbling. I think the way I found out was even more humbling. I was on a call with the 11 tribal nations and then also the Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan with Minnesota. And I'd gotten a couple text messages, then all of a sudden, one of the chief executives from the tribe basically just says, "Hey, I want to acknowledge Levi Brown just received a 40 under 40 award, national award, right in front of everybody." And so that was on a Zoom call. So that was pretty humbling in the sense of, you know, what are you supposed to say? But at the same time, I think it's ironic in the sense of the work that I actually do has to do with, you know, everybody that was involved on that call. So.
Oh, that's nice. Well, tell us about the work that you do at the Department of Transportation.
One of the foundations for how I get up in the morning and what I do is looking at changing social norms between state and tribes. And the root of that work that I do comes down to, you know, the work I did when I worked for 12 years with Leech Lake. In our county work, where we kind of changed the dynamics. We didn't want to be seen as adversaries. We wanted to be seen as partners. We wanted to be able to work across difficult issues. We wanted to solve problems for people, including our community. And so a lot of my work is really focused today with the state, now with state and the 11 tribal nations of Minnesota, is focused on how do we change institutions, meaning our, you know, agencies and how we work. How do we give them the capacity to work with tribal nations and be successful? And what that really gets down to is the individual staff members changing, you know, 500 years of an understanding of Indian country and trying to get them to the mindset of what Indian country truly is. And that, you know, we're not Hollywood. We're not cowboys fighting Indians. We're not supposed to be always fighting each other. We're supposed to be working together to solve issues, especially in government, whether it's tribal government or state government. And I think that's the core for a lot of my work is really trying to take that and make it so my kids and my grandkids won't have to, you know, fight some of these fights, that they'll already be done and they can actually start solving some of these issues.
Yeah, I know we've had you on before and we've talked about, you know, the fight over wild rice, the safety of wild rice in Minnesota. How is this year's crop?
So this year's crop was pretty average, maybe a little bit below average, but the market for wild rice has shifted. So because the demand is so high now, an average year is just seems like it barely can keep up with the, you know, with what the demand is. And so I think that's a good thing, because if you are an actual harvester, or maybe a retail seller, that, you know, you can make money. And as a harvester and how important that is to the community, I know that, you know, that having that demand is huge for the harvester.
Yeah, I know. And it's so important to get it from the tribal nations or get it from individual. We've learned a lot on this show about, you know, if you just go over to Trader Joe's and buy the wild rice, it's not real wild rice. And it's so important. What's the situation with the water and, you know, the levels of pollution in the water and things like that?
So the north central Minnesota region, you know, we're sitting at the headwaters of the Mississippi, right? We're at the Continental Divide, where half of Leech Lake, the northern half of Leech Lake flows to Hudson Bay. The southern half of Leech Lake flows to our Gulf of Mississippi, our Gulf of Mexico. But you think about that, we sit in a pretty good spot. But you can go just, 2 hours south and you start getting into more agriculture and other areas, or you go farther east where you might have other environmental impacts, and you can see the wild rice degradation. So when you think about the environmental impacts, we're doing it to ourselves. We're taking the one food that nobody besides the creator is, basically put there for us, and we're harming it. So I think, our kids are going to probably be shaking their heads at us if we don't stop doing what we're doing.
Well, Levi, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing a little bit about the work that you're doing, building those important relationships between tribes and states and the state of Minnesota. And we really appreciate you joining the show.
Okay, thank you.
Joining us now from Moore, Oklahoma, is Tasha Friday. She's an assistant director of the Tribal Youth Resource Center, housed at the Tribal Law and Policy Institute. And she is Wichita, Kiowa, and Caddo. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Tasha.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you again. Tasha, how did it feel to find out that you were 40 under 40?
So I think it's really funny that all of us have these stories. I have a similar story. I was just working virtually as we all are right now, and someone popped up on my social media and congratulated me. And so that's how I found out. it was surprising because I didn't know, that they were going to release those names. And I was just really honored to be a part of the group.
Well, tell us a little bit about the work that you do at the Tribal Youth Resource Center.
Sure. So at the Tribal Youth Resource Center, we are a training and technical assistance center. We have a cooperative agreement with the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. And so we provide training and technical assistance to tribes that have been funded for juvenile healing to wellness courts and tribal youth programs. And then we also offer training and technical assistance to any federally recognized tribes. So really working and directing our efforts toward youth and keeping them out of the juvenile justice system, but really being culturally grounded in the work that we do.
Yeah, tell us about these tribal youth healing wellness courts. I love this idea.
Sure. So essentially, it would be more of like a drug court model, but incorporating culture and really using the things that we know traditionally and within our communities that were resources and able to enable us to help heal the individual, so the individual youth, but also healing the community as well. So it's a very holistic approach. And what we found is that we know what works in our communities and what works in the Western society in a very punitive judicial system is not necessarily what we would have done traditionally or what is going to work for our children and the specific challenges we have as tribal nations. So it's a really great model, and we've seen a lot of success with it and just the sense that it is healing-based and strength-based and resilience-based has served communities well.
Have you been seeing success with it? Do you have any evidence that, this is a better approach than the punitive approach?
Well, I think just for, the whole model of it really addressing the community and bringing in stakeholders in a very meaningful, collaborative way to support youth and really reinforcing their role within our community. I think, over many years of having experienced genocide and assimilation, that some of that has been lost to us or disconnected our youth in certain ways from their identity, from their pride in who they are, and really reestablishing that as a way to prevent or intervene when they are struggling with challenges. We've seen that one thing, this very unique model between the Juvenile Healing to Wellness Courts and the tribal youth programs that we are able to help and support incorporating culture. We have seen a resurgence of programs on both sides of our work, really incorporating coming of age ceremonies again, establishing a youth role within tribal society, what that entails, what are the protocols, and then also in that, a lot of those are gender specific, but then also seeing our communities really wrap around and acknowledge the special place that our LGBTQ or two-spirit relatives and youth have in our community. So it's just a really healing process for the entire community.
I love it. Okay, so Tasha, my understanding is you're just like many of us in Indian country, and you have about 7 jobs. Tell us about some of the other work that you do.
Sure. My friends and I like to joke. I do all the things. But I really, there's so much good work out there to be done. And so when these opportunities present themselves, there are some things I just can't pass up because I really want to be impactful and thoughtful and intentional with the work that I do. So I also work with the National Criminal Justice Training Center. In that capacity, we work with CTES Area 2, and that's helping tribes plan their entire judicial system. So really looking at what is going to work in our communities, how do we want to tailor our judicial systems? And I view that as an exercise of sovereignty, making those decisions for ourselves and really creating hybrids that are specific to the community needs and goals. So I really love that work as well. I get to do a tribal community of practice where we address different judicial models and things that they could incorporate. I am the chairwoman of my tribe's election commission. That is a unique experience that's new to me. Really how I came to be involved with this organization and attending RES and getting to know that is that I am on the board of managers for Quivira, which is an economic development company within my tribe that I'm enrolled in, which is the Wichita and affiliated tribes. And so really trying to help guide and direct the path forward for us to have economic stability outside of gaming and a lot of the things that we've seen tribes do over the years, really trying to diversify and create a space for us to be impactful in the business world. And then most recently, I was a campaign manager for one of my dear friends. She ran for the Ogallala Sioux Tribal Vice President. We won, yay, Alicia Mousseau. And so that was kind of some hard work there, unpaid, but really enjoyed it. I have grown up spending all my summers and have lots of Hunkah relatives at the Ogallala Sioux Tribe. And so really impacting that community in a positive way was fed my spirit.
Oh, Tasha, that's great. I hope you do get to take a little bit of a break this year, maybe take some time off and enjoy yourself as well.
Always. I enjoy spending time doing cultural things when we're not social distancing, spending time with my 2 daughters, Isabella and Kennedy. And so, life is short and I want to make the most of it and do the best that I can for the people and the future generations in any way that I can.
That's great. Thank you, Tasha, for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And we're just about to end, but Chad Marchand from the National Center for American Indian Enterprise, I want to give you a moment to tell us, what's coming up with RES and how you guys are shifting things for this coming year.
Yeah, Monica, thanks for asking about RES. We appreciate it. Our Reservation Economic Summit is scheduled right now for March 15th through the 17th. There was a recent announcement that was also made that we're actually partnering with ABLE this year, so it's American Indian Business Leaders. And so they're actually going to do their conference on Saturday, Sunday before RES. And so that'll also bring in some more student attendees that are wanting to focus in on business as their career. But right now, the format of RES this year is still going to be 2 possible options. There's going to be an in-person option available. That's going to be at Paris Las Vegas Hotel Casino, as well as a virtual option for attendees that want to attend virtually during this time. But, I want to applaud our CEO and President Chris James for leading this effort. And we're taking all the protocols with COVID seriously. So,
thank you, Chad. We appreciate it. Also, thanks to Tyler Parisian, Tasha Friday, Jacob Schellinger, and Levi Brown. Join us tomorrow for a discussion about Navajo-run Winslow Indian Healthcare Center. We'll see you tomorrow.
Ausiau, nahiu alihelusti taskulaha, kehia tata na iti si danela usti unatanilohistana, julo sai. Yitatino usti unatanilohistana, yostela digutani dasdoti o wasa atalsi doti. Tatlanoheta nioia a yela nudanadega anaxestis naski, yiged stela. At healthcare.gov, ale 1-800-318-2596. He agetanosa Medicare, ale Medicaid unadalkai.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.